Thank you so much for being here with me today. Today I'm going to be presenting on the results of two field trials myself and my colleagues conducted this past summer at beautiful Highmore Farm, which you can see here, which is located in Monmouth, Maine, near the capital of the state, Augusta. First, let's talk about a brief overview. Within most soils, you have two basic processes that are going on simultaneously. Carbon sequestration, or mobilization as it's sometimes called, which is basically carbon that is going into the soil and then remains temporarily or long-term inaccessible to soil microbes. And then carbon mineralization, which is what happens when microbes take carbon, break down the compounds, and use it to fuel metabolic respiration. So within every soil, you have basically an input into the soil and an output. And the summation of that represents the balance of the ecosystem. Now, on a global scale, it's generally important for us to think about this because of concerns with the loss of carbon from soil that then goes into the atmosphere and fuels problems. On a smaller scale, however, what we find is in a lot of natural ecosystems, the summation is close to zero or even slightly in favor of it being sequestered in the soil. However, within agroecosystems, human-managed ecosystems, we generally find there is a net loss of carbon from the soil. And this can have long-term negative effects for the health of the soil. Now, organic systems, which are the systems that I was working with this summer and my colleagues, they depend significantly on the mineralization of carbon to provide a slow release of nutrients. And respiration in and of itself is considered a soil health parameter. If there's no respiration in your soil, it is either asleep or dead. You want to have respiration happening within the soil. Respiration is generally controlled by three primary factors: the amount of food in the soil, that is in the form of carbonaceous compounds, the amount of moisture in the soil, and the temperature. And generally speaking, soil respiration is an excellent indicator of biological activity, and it indicates the rate of carbon mineralization and, to an extent, nitrogen mineralization, as nitrogen is the limiting factor. Organic systems will make use of techniques such as the addition of carbonaceous compounds, such as compost, to the soil, and therefore should, in theory, contribute to carbon sequestration within the soil. However, we do not always have easy ways of quantifying this. And one of the things that we oftentimes lack data on is how that respiration proceeds over the course of a season. Generally speaking, we would expect it would be a sort of bell curve. It should rise with temperature and decrease with decreasing temperature during the fall. But how do these other factors interplay with that? And how is it that we humans can alter our management strategies, such as tillage and the addition of carbonaceous compounds, to try and maximize the health of the soil? And how do these techniques alter the respiration? Those are the sort of questions that we were playing around with in this study. So let's talk about the two studies. I had two basic studies. There was a permanent bed tillage trial that's been in permanent organic bed tillage since 2014. And for this project, our hypothesis was that we would expect that more tillage would equal more respiration based on the literature. Less tillage should equal less respiration, just based on the literature that we've read. We also had a high tunnel organic system that has been managed this way since 2013. It had various compost amendments over 8 replicates and 5 treatments. And our basic hypothesis for the high tunnel was that we would expect to see a sort of linear increase. As we increase the amount of compost being added, we should see the amount of respiration happening increase, in theory. In both of these, they were both small-scale vegetable production systems, as are common in the state of Maine. Cabbage, rotation of cabbage and winter squash. It was cabbage this year for the permanent beds, and a rotation of tomatoes and cucumbers. It was cucumbers this year for the high tunnel. Let's delve a little more into the treatments. For the permanent bed study, we had 6 tillage treatments entirely, but we elected to only select 3 in this case over 4 replicates. We selected a full tillage treatment so that we could see one end of the spectrum and a fully no-till treatment on the other end of the spectrum. as this is an organic system, there are no herbicides sprayed, so the no-till system tended to have a very high volume of weeds, which were only clipped at the beginning of the season when the cabbage were transplanted into them. And as a sort of check on the no-till, we also examined a no-till tarping, which is treated the same as the no-till, but we place a silage tarp that's impervious to light on it for 6 to 8 weeks from thaw in the spring until planting in mid-June. For the high-tunnel compost, we had 5 treatments: a control to which no compost was added, just a simple NPK fertilizer, a 10, 20, 50, and 90 ton per acre, or 22, 4,500, 12, and 200 micrograms per hectare treatment. This is a roughly linear addition to the soil. And we sampled 3 of 8 replicates in this instance. Let me talk to you a little about our methodology. So, as you might have noticed from the title of the talk, we are measuring basal soil respiration. Basal soil respiration is essentially in situ respiration. That is, we are trying to avoid disturbance of the soil to try and get an accurate picture of what microbes in the field are doing. In order to do this, we took a soil knife rather than an auger to avoid disturbing the soil profile to a depth of 10 centimeters, took soil samples from within the center of the permanent bed rows to avoid an edge effect, and from within the center of the permanent bed rows, which were under plasticulture and drip irrigated. And we took 8 subsamples per sampling instance, ran them through a 10 millimeter sieve, which eliminated large rocks and large root particles, and then put this in a plastic bag out of the sun and took it back to the lab as quickly as possible. In addition to measuring the soil for using this methodology for respiration, we also measured temperature, soil moisture, and various weather parameters within the field using onset technology and gravimetric soil moisture. Once we took these samples back to the lab, we attempted to run them through our process as quickly as possible such that they were all completed within 3 hours of sampling. Generally speaking, it was closer to an hour and a half. There were just one or two instances where other commitments prevented me from moving as quickly as I would have liked. The methodology we used was Solvita probes. You can see an example of them here. And this is basically a plastic paddle with a agar film on it that is dyed blue, and it'll turn a new color from dark green up to yellow, as you can see in the lower left section of the slide, dependent on CO2 concentration. The ambient room temperature was an average of 22 degrees centigrade, and in brief, we measured out 90 grams of soil, put it in a container, put a paddle in the container, sealed it airtight, and then left it for 24 hours within this room, at which point we then removed the paddle and ran it through a digital calorimetric reader, which quantified parts per million CO2, which we have converted to CO2C milligrams per kilogram of fresh wheat soil. So, what did we find? We'll talk about the permanent beds first. We found that our soil temperature at 10 centimeters was about what we would expect over the course of the summer, a steady rise and then a leveling off and an eventual falling as fall temperatures intervened. One interesting thing we found was that the average air temperature and the average soil temperature were very similar to each other, even at 10 centimeters. The diurnal swing, of course, was greater in the air, but the temperature was roughly similar. Moisture, we had a very dry summer. You'll notice on the scale here, we are talking tenths of an inch here. We did not get a lot of rain this summer. On the whole, 9.6 inches spread out over the course of about 4 months, so very little. And in particular, I would call your attention to the very large gap in the middle, which was from about mid-July to mid-August, where we got next to no rain at all. If we examine gravimetric soil moisture, what we can see is, as you would expect, a steady fall in the moisture over the course of the season. The all three of them, though there were slight differences between the treatments, ended up coming together and being roughly similar, with generally speaking the tilled treatment having a little less moisture than the tarped no-till, and the regular till being halfway in between, though they all pretty much stayed the same. So, if we look at our respiration, it appears that respiration in the field for our experiment was much more dependent on moisture than it was dependent on temperature. We had a very high rise and a peak at the very beginning of the season, and then it continually fell throughout the course of the season. You'll see the blue arrow there. That is pointing to the rain event that ended the drought in August, and you'll notice the respiration jumped immediately, which would suggest that moisture was indeed the limiting factor here. Some interesting trends emerged here, though. You will notice that, contrary to our hypothesis, that the no-till plots actually have the highest respiration, not the lowest respiration. No-till plots in this case are the dark blue dashed line, and the tilled plots are the light blue dashed line. The tilled plots tended to be quite a bit lower than the no-till plots when it came to soil respiration, significantly so, while the tarp no-till also tended to be quite a bit lower than the regular tilled. We asked questions about this and thought it might have been due to the significant presence of weeds in the no-till plots. And indeed, if you look at our weed data, we find that we had almost five times as many weeds in the no-till plots as in the other plots, a significant difference. We did do a small test at the end of the season based on the areas of weed sampling and the no-till plots, which were completely cleared of weeds, but found that there wasn't really enough data to suggest one way or the other whether weeds or roots were the issue. For our compost trial, we examined, as I said, a control and then four treatments. The control soil went about as we would expect, with moisture being constantly added through drip irrigation. We had a steady rise throughout the season, much as you would expect, and we believe that the effect was probably soil temperature and some interaction with plant roots, as the respiration seemed to jump as the plants established their roots. In terms of response to compost rates, early in the season we had a very clear linear relationship, almost perfect linear. These are three replicates, incidentally. So a very steady rise depended on the amount of compost that was added. As the season progressed, however, we found that it leveled off at the upper levels. The respiration started dropping even as it increased in the lower levels, causing a sort of plateau effect. So how did the soil treatments influence carbon mineralization? Well, this is where the peculiarity happens. Our control ended up having higher respiration than our two lowest compost treatments. There was not a significant difference between the control and the 20 ton per acre treatment, but with the 10, it was significantly smaller. The 50 and the 90 acted as expected, being significantly bigger, but you will note that the other ones are a lot closer together, and this is not what we would expect when adding carbonaceous compounds to the soil. We would expect them to be higher than the control. So, of course, one of the interesting questions you have to ask yourself is, what is the fate of carbon in the soil? When I add compost to the soil, what is going to happen to it? Is it going to be respired or sequestered? So we calculated that the amount of respired carbon over the course of the season is about 1% of the native carbon, 3,000 kilograms per hectare. That's a roughly normal rate for a main soil of this particular soil type. However, you'll notice that the respiration rate for the other two is quite a bit lower than that, which would seem to indicate there might be some sort of suppressive effect happening. Otherwise, however, we had a linear relationship between the different application rates of compost. So in summary, mineralization in our tillage plots appeared to track soil moisture. No huge surprises there. What was surprising was our no-till plots had issues with being a lot higher than we were expecting. We think this is due to heavy weed growth, but there are, of course, other theories that might deal with this. We simply noticed a lot more roots, so we thought there might be a rhizosphere effect of some kind. One interesting thing is we felt that overall, the respiration behavior showed a lot of resilience in the face of low soil moisture, maintaining a pretty steady state despite the constantly declining soil moisture, which, as you may have noted, dropped well below 20%. For our compost trials, we had a strong linear relationship at the beginning of the season between compost rate and respiration that diminished as the season went on, with the plateauing at the top. Compost, for whatever reason, seemed to suppress the native carbon respiration by about 1,000 kilograms per hectare. Our overall estimate of the mineralization of the carbon compost was between 21 and 23%. Assuming background soil respiration, which means that about that percent of the compost was respired as CO2. So in conclusion, this was a nice little demonstration of the ability of the Solvita test to provide reproducible results over the course of the season. We found that carbon dioxide respiration changed significantly during the season, increasing during the growth period, as we might expect. Compost exerted, again, this peculiar effect on soil respiration, a seeming suppression of the respiration, and that of course leads to many more questions, which I think is the point of a scientific enterprise. I have more questions when you end than when you start. So we have a few ideas that we're throwing out. Is it possible that there were foreign microbes added with the compost that ended up competing highly with the bulk soil and caused issues there? Was it moisture stress due to the water, due to the compost pulling more water due to its higher water holding capacity? Was it possible it was a negative priming effect as has been observed in some biochar studies? We'd love to hear your ideas, and we will be around to answer any questions you might have. Thank you so much for your attention. I appreciate it.